Let me draw you into the context. If you're not familiar with this story in 2 Kings chapter 5, there's a part of it that shows up a lot in children's Bibles, right? It's the story of Naaman, right? Do you know that story at all? Maybe you don't. But the part that shows up in children's Bibles all the time is that there's this little slave girl. She was captured from Israel, and she prays for her master Naaman to be healed from his leprosy, and then he's healed. And isn't that awesome that a little slave girl would pray and want her master to be healed? And that's great, and that's a beautiful part of the story. But that's all I really knew about the story until a little while ago, until maybe a couple of years ago. And I actually read the rest of the story and went, holy cow, there's a huge chunk here that is wild. I mean, in fact, there's a piece of the story here that I think encapsulates the message of God, the gospel of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament, and is a great preview, if you will, where a thousand years later, Jesus comes to fulfill. So in terms of the context, you know, you have Israel as a nation is split. You have Judah in the south. You have Israel in the north. Syria to the north of Israel is a constant threat. They are enemies to the nation of Israel. And Elisha, the prophet, is on the scene. There's Elijah, you may have heard of him, but then there's Elisha. He passes the baton, and he's doing his prophetic work up and down the nation. But then you get into 2 Kings chapter 5, and there's a little bit of the story takes a little bit of a turn. And instead of the narrative focusing on Elisha, the prophet, and his work in the nation of Israel, the author then shifts and puts the attention on Naaman, this foreigner from Syria. So we're going to pick up the story there. I'd like to pray and ask the Lord's blessing, though, before we dive into our topic. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for this morning. It is a blessing to be able to open up your word and to read it and to be challenged by it and to be transformed by it. God, I pray that I'm thankful that we have that opportunity, that week after week, many of us are able to come and hear your word. I pray, Father, that you would soften our hearts and open up our ears and our minds to receive what you have for us. God, thank you for this morning. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. I'm going to read this to you. It's 19 verses. You'll be okay. Follow along with me, and beginning in verse 1. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my lord were with the prophet," that's Elisha, "who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord, the king, "Thus and so spoke the girl from the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." And when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Only consider and see how he is seeking a quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him now come to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman was angry and went away, saying, "Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in rage. But his servants came near and said to him, "My father, it is a great word that the prophet has actually spoken to you. Will you not do it? Has he actually said to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Then he returned to the man of God and all his company, and he came and stood before him. And he said, "Behold, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So accept now a present from your servant." But he said, "As the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will receive none." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Then Naaman said, "If not, please let there be given to your servant 2 mules load of earth. From now on, your servant will not offer a burnt offering or sacrifice to any god but the Lord. In this matter, may the Lord pardon your servant when my master goes into the house of Ramon to worship there, leaning on my arm. And I bow myself in the house of Ramon when I bow myself in the house. When I bow myself in the house of Ramon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter." He said to him, "Go in peace." This morning, what I want us to look at and focus on is why an encounter with God completely transforms your life. Why, when you come into contact with the presence and the power and the person of God, why there can be transformation. Why it's even possible. And what I want to look at specifically is 3 things. One, why we need to encounter God. And not just once in our life, not just at Sunday school, not just when we're kids, but every single day, why you and I need to encounter God. Secondly, how an encounter with God will transform your life, or how it can transform your life. And finally, how to actually encounter God. So why we need to encounter God, how an encounter with God will transform your life, and how to actually encounter the Lord God. I remember, first, why we need to encounter God. I remember a movie in the 80s. There were all these movies that came out. At least I know they're still here, but today. But there was. It seemed like in the late 80s and early 90s, there were tons of movies where you had a main character, a protagonist, who had everything going for himself or herself, and then all of a sudden become introspective and take a hard look at their life and realize, oh, I need to change. And then in 90 minutes, their entire life was wrapped up and everything was great, and you could just walk out of the movie theater feeling great because all you need is 90 minutes and a music montage, and then everything is going to be fine again, right? A lot of movies like that, and they're still around. But one in particular was the movie Regarding Henry. Remember Regarding Henry? Remember Harrison Ford? Come on, Harrison Ford? Come on. He's a dream. Yes. Thank you. Regarding Henry. So Regarding Henry starts out, and he, you know, Harrison Ford plays this, you know, lawyer, big shot. He works in Manhattan. He owns the earth. I mean, he's just in charge of everything. Nothing can get this guy down. His life is, you know, they set him up to be, you know, so that you're watching it going, it'd be awesome to live that life. Cars, look at that house he lives in. I want that, right? And then, you know, in the first act of the movie, he's at a convenience store buying something, I don't remember, but he's in a convenience store and he's shot. And he has a brain injury, right? And he has to, throughout the movie, he has to learn how to walk again. He has to learn how to talk again. And then as the movie progresses, you know, he's taking that great 80s, 90s hard look at his life and says, I don't like who I was. I don't like who I am. And he goes through this process where he becomes, you know, a new person. And again, and 90 minutes later, he's like with his wife, he's restored the relationship, and they're getting their daughter out of boarding school because she doesn't want to go there. She wants to go to another school or whatever. And the music starts and the credits roll, and we all feel great about Harrison Ford Regarding Henry, rated PG-13, 1991, directed by somebody. I don't remember. The point is, Harrison Ford has some sort of transformation in his life. There's introspection. Naaman, we come to the character of Naaman, and there's some overlap there between Regarding Henry, and I'm not saying you need to go out and rent that movie, but, you know, it's not bad. Harrison Ford, he's a dream, right? Naaman is the commander of the army of Syria, all right? He's probably more like a prime minister, okay? Not just a commander, but more like a prime minister. It says he's a great man, he's a great reputation, he's a brave man, a man of valor, and he's the guy that everyone would look at in culture and society and go, that's who I want to be like. You know, he's the one that everybody, the left, the right, progressives, conservatives, everybody looks at Naaman and goes, that's who I want to be like. Right? He's a commander and a leader in a powerful nation, and everybody likes him. Like, Tell me a time in history, or just name the last person, even in our own country, where everyone said, I like that guy. I like that guy. There's not a lot of them, right? Because we're so divided. Another sermon for another time on division. But for right now, Naaman, as we read here, is on top. But we read in verse 1 that he was a leper. We read that he has this piece of him that's outside of his control that is slowly killing him. And we don't, you know, what kind of leprosy was it? You know, we're not exactly sure. You know, it could be a number of skin diseases. It could have been something that he caught from somebody else. It could have been part of his genetic makeup. But here's the point. Naaman comes to a place where he realizes that that self-sufficiency is a lie. Because no matter how great he's built up his life, no matter how well he has ordered things, he's not self-sufficient. There's something outside of his control that is destroying him. And listen, for all of us, no matter how good a choices you and I make, no matter how well we organize, no matter how much insurance or security we have, no matter what we do to try to live a just easy, comfortable, secure life, we come to a place, in fact, we must come to a place where we recognize I'm not in control. That I can't hold back the wave, I cannot hold back the onslaught of destruction. People are going to die. People are going to get sick. Relationships are going to be tarnished. We're going to lose jobs. We're going to lose accounts. We're going to fade away. What we confuse ourselves with, or what we try to convince ourselves, is that as long as I make, and this is definitely the American way, We try to convince ourselves that as long as I make the right decisions, the right financial choices, I put my kids in the right school, as long as I set myself up well for the future, I have the right 401k, as long as I build these defenses, then I'm going to be okay. And the problem with that is no matter how well you order your life, you and I are not in control, are we? There is a leprosy that exists. And every single one of us is powerless to hold it back. Naaman comes to a place where he realizes, I cannot save myself. That's why we need to encounter God. That's why every single one of us, don't kid yourself, every single one of us needs the presence of God. Needs the person of God. When we realize I cannot order my life, structure my life, plan my life, define my life without there being some level of suffering, or consequence, or pain, or death. It's impossible. And the Western way, the American way, is you are in control, you are in the power of your own destiny. Another reason why we need God in our life, this may seem obvious, but we recognize that the world can't help us. We recognize the world can't help us. Naaman, in the story, first goes to his own king. Clearly, he's gone to his own king, King of Syria. King of Syria can't do anything. So then what does he do? He goes to the king of Israel. Because in those days, prophets, in ancient times, prophets, the clergy, were under the direct control of the monarchy, right? And so the prophets, the clergy, they took all of their cues from the king. And so he goes to Elisha, he goes to the king of Israel, because he thinks he's the one who pulls the strings, and the king of Israel tears his clothes and says, I can't do this, right? And then he goes to Elisha, and what does he expect? He wants Elisha to come outside of his house. He wants him to wave his hands around. He wants him to perform this incredible, elaborate ceremony. And what happens? He realizes that all what I need is outside of the control, is outside of the hands, it's outside of the bounds, the boundaries of the world. It says that he brought a certain amount of money, a certain, hundreds of talents. Translated, it was, one commentator put it like this. Naaman brought more money with him to pay for his healing than probably existed in Israel at that time. Right? A lot of money. right? It's like Bezos coming in and saying, hey, don't worry, I'll cover the check, okay? And it says, I mean, it's interesting too, it says that he brought 10 pairs of clothes, which, like, you and I might laugh at because we probably have more than 10 changes of clothes. I know I do, okay? Mercy, right? Like, because, you know, changes of clothes were very valuable. I mean, most people just had what they were wearing, and that's it. And then when it was wash day, you just walked out into the river, kind of wiggled around a little bit, and then walked out, right? Like, that was wash day, right? Because you only had one set of clothes. Naaman is thinking, all I need to do is go to the right people, jump through the right hoops, do the right things, and then I'll be healed. And what Naaman recognizes is that the world can't help him. His wealth, his power, his connections, the people that he knows can't help him. One of the things that we often do, and especially I see this a lot in our culture today, is when things are going wrong or when things are not going according to plan, one of the ways that we think that we can fix the problem is by blaming other people. Anybody do that? You point the finger at other people. This is happening in my life, and I'll feel better about it if I can just go, it's you. You're the one that did this to me, or this culture, or these people, or this society, which is how we get into racism, sexism, all of those things. When we start pointing the finger at other people. And Naaman is in a place where, you saw, when Elisha says, hey, just go down to the Jordan River, he's mad. This is not what I came for. You were supposed to wave your arms around and perform the ceremony. Listen, and I say this, I don't know any of you. I know some of you. We need the Lord, the presence of God, the power of God, the person of God in our lives every single moment of the day. Why? Because you and I are not self-sufficient enough to thrive, to live, to find joy and peace, to find any kind of satisfaction. You and I need the presence, the person, and the power of God in our life because no one else in this world can be that for us. Your job can't be God to you. Your children cannot be God to you. Your church cannot be God to you. We need God to be God to us. So Naaman goes to Elijah. What does he say? Go jump in the river. Naaman says, we got better rivers in Syria, right? We got much better rivers in Syria. And it's interesting. There's this incredible chasm in between verses 13 and 14. You see it there? The servant, you know, he wants to, Elisha says, go jump in the river. He's upset. He's mad because he thought he was going to have to do something. The servants come and say, look, you wanted to do something. Go jump in the river and go wash and be clean. And there's this incredible chasm between verses 13 and 14 because for whatever reason, and we'll talk about it in a moment, but for whatever reason, Naaman goes and jumps in the river and decides to wash himself clean. It says, so he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child and was clean. Now, I'm sure like all of the hand lotion people in the world would love to know what was in that water, right? Because it says that his flesh was restored like that of a little child, right? Now, I have a 2-year-old daughter, and I have a 7, 5, and 2-year-old, and my 2-year-old daughter, you know babies, right? You've held babies before. Isn't it just amazing, their skin? You could just put ice on there, and it just slides right over. Like, you know, some of us, our skin, you put a piece of ice, and it just sits there, and it's like, I'm not moving, you know, because there's age there, you know, there's well-worn, you know, we're a little older. But kids, it's like smooth. There's no imperfections, right? And I never thought I would do this with my 2-year-old daughter. I grab her cheeks and I just squeeze her cheeks, right? I don't know why, I just do. Because they're so beautiful, puffy little cheeks. And I don't know if people probably weren't doing that to Naaman after he came up out of the water, because he is a general, he is the prime minister, and you just don't do that to the prime minister, right? But the point is, he goes and does it, and he's completely restored. Now, was there anything magical about the water? No. Was there anything super spiritual about dipping 7 times? No. Was there anything super extra special about Elisha telling him to do it? That if anybody else told him to do it? No. So what happened? What happened? Naaman goes in a leper, and he comes out restored. Why in the world would that happen? Or what, excuse me, I'm ahead of myself a little bit. What does this do to him? Well, Naaman comes out of the water, and listen to what he says. Then he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and he came and stood before him, and he said, "Behold, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel." Now, this is an incredible statement made by someone at this time, because their culture was actually very similar to ours, very, very relativistic. So there was the God or gods of Syria, and there was the God of Israel, and there was the gods of Egypt, right? Like, so deities were regional. So you believe what you want to believe, and that's fine, and we're going to believe what we want to believe, and that's fine. Naaman doesn't come out of the Jordan River and says, "I know that the main God, like we have our gods, but the main God is the God of Israel." But what does he say? He comes out of the water and says, "I know that there is what? No God. There is no God except the God of Israel." His worldview, after encountering God, completely transforms. He does not see, and this is miraculous, but he does not see the world the way that he used to. You know, very pluralistic, very, you know, again, you have your truth and I have my truth. He comes out of the water being kind of politically incorrect and offensive, because he comes out saying there is no God except the God of Israel. See, when you come into contact with the God of the universe and you're walking with him on a regular basis, your mind, the way you see the world begins to change, doesn't it? You see people differently, right? Like, they are no longer just people in the way. You ever get like that? You're walking down a crowded street and everyone else is just people in the way. I was in San Francisco last week with my mom. I took her to see a show for her birthday. And we were walking we're walking from one side of the city to the other. We had to walk about a mile and a half. And walking right through downtown. And so it's crowded and it's like this. And there's not only business people walking, but there's also, you know, street vendors. And there's, "Hey, come support SEALs," you know, or whatever. And so they're everywhere. And as we're walking, my mindset was, we have 30 minutes to get to the ferry so we don't miss it. And so what does everybody in front of me become? That's right, an obstacle. And now I'm on a journey. I'm on a mission to get through all of these people, right? And I don't have narrow anything. So there's no, like, sliding through people, right? And so, you know, I put on the, like, I'm going to see through people, you know, "Hey, support the SEALs. We need to save them." And I just ignore you, right? And listen, all the people that are in the way are all people that God looks at and goes, "There's my son, there's my daughter, there's my kids." They don't know it. They may not know that I'm theirs, but there they are, and I love them, and I see the worth and value in them. And hey, dumb Jason, would you just open up your eyes and get your eyes off yourself? There will be another ferry, and if you miss it, guess what? You're an adult, you know, and I have a credit card. You know how to get home, right? Like, stop. Get your eyes off of yourself. See, when you encounter the Lord, right, it changes. When the Lord transforms your life, you see people, you see life differently. The other thing that's interesting here is, listen to what he says in verse 15 on the second part. "I know that there is no God on earth but all in all of Israel, so now accept now a present from your servant." Now, Naaman came to Israel with a lot of money and 10 changes of clothes. Why? Because he's going to buy his miracle, right? Right? Like, and which is, isn't that the way that just kind of the default mindset? If I want something or need something from God, I've got to some way pay for it. I've got to be good for a week. I've got to earn it somehow. Like, that's just, listen, that is the default setting of our brains and our hearts, isn't it? And we fall back into that all the time. Naaman shows up ready to pay. Elisha doesn't want any of it. Naaman gets healed outside of being anything except a pagan sinner before God. He's healed. And what does he want to do? Does he want to pay for his miracle? No. He wants to give it away. He wants to give his money away. Because what does he say? Accept this gift. See, when you come into contact with the Lord, you realize just how rich you are. When Jesus comes into your life and you are transformed by him, you realize that you were way more rich than you ever thought. Now, I don't mean that monetarily necessarily, okay? And I'm certainly not promoting any kind of health, wealth gospel here at all. But when you know when you experience the presence of God and it fills you with a kind of joy and generosity that you can't explain, you're ready to give everything away, right? Why? Because I have all the riches I need in God. And Naaman wants to just give his wealth away. I don't need this. Money is not now his measure of success and status in culture or in his society. It's just money. It's just money. It has no hold over him any longer. And now he can be what? He can be free of it. In fact, you see this over and over again, especially in the Gospels, right? It seems like every time a rich man comes into contact with Jesus in the Gospels, what happens? And he hears and believes. What does he want to do? He's like, look, I will pay back. I mean, the rich young ruler, what does he say? He wants to pay back like seven times the people who have given to him, right? Like he's just, I want to get rid of it. The Christians that Paul writes about in 2 Corinthians, under extreme poverty and persecution, and what is it? They keep writing for opportunities. Like some historians venture to say that they were having trouble even making their basic needs met, right? Like food and rent and all those things. And they were asking Paul, can we give more? Can we give more? Can we give more? Why? Because money had no hold on them anymore. They were far more rich than they ever possibly could imagine. Why? Because they had encountered the Lord. So you see the world differently, you see your possessions differently, and then all of a sudden you see every single day begin to transform. I never caught this before, I didn't know what it meant, but listen to what Naaman asks for. He says, he tries to give the money away. I will receive none. Verse 17, then Naaman said, if not, please let there be given to your servant 2 mule loads of earth. For from now on, your servant will not offer burnt offerings or sacrifice to any god but the Lord. In this matter, may the Lord pardon your servant when my master goes into the house of Ramon to worship there, leaning on my arm, and I bow myself in the house of Ramon. When I bow myself in the house of Ramon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter. Naaman asked for 2 mule loads of dirt, or of earth. Your Bible may say earth or dirt. Now, why does he want to do that? Well, there's 2 possibilities here, and they're both awesome. They're both awesome. The first one is he wants to bring back earth, which may have also included timber or whatever, from Israel, because he wants to go and build his own altar in Syria. He wants to go back and build his own altar in Syria, which is incredible, right? So here's the prime minister of Syria now building an altar to the God of Israel. That's going to cause some heads to turn. That's going to cause some people to go, this man's life is transformed in just a little bit. Or here's the other way, and I don't know if cooler is the right word to put it, but here's the other thing he wanted to do that it may mean. That he wanted 2 mule loads of earth, of dirt, so that from Israel, so that every time he went into the temple of Ramon, pagan temple in Syria, he would spread the dirt out in a symbolic way. And when he bowed down with the king, because part of the job of the prime minister is to accompany the king into the temple, right? Go with him into the temple to worship Ramon, right? And that's part of his job. And so what he wants to do, possibly, is spread the dirt out on the ground, and when he kneels down, he's not kneeling down to a pagan deity that he knows now does not exist, but he's kneeling down before the God of the universe, the God of Israel. Now, why is that significant? Do you think anybody's going to notice what he's doing? everyone's going to go, what in the world is Naaman doing? He left a leper. He's back. He's got skin like the babies, right? He's going to be in all the new ads, L'Oreal ads, right? And now he's dumping dirt on the floor of the temple. What's he doing? And people are going to ask, and they're going to see something different in Naaman. See, here's what happens. When you encounter the Lord, when he comes into your life, when you give yourself over to him, he doesn't just change. Listen, this is, the perspective is on Christianity that, you know, you become a Christian, and so you start to clean up your language a little bit, and you go to church on Sundays, and maybe you give a little bucks here and there, and, you know, you try to be a better person, right? You just kind of straighten out some loose ends, right? And that's what being a Christian is all about. But what we see from our brother Naaman here is his life has completely been transformed. And everyone's going to know it, and he's probably going to get some backlash for it. I mean, we don't know the end of the story here, but, you know, does he lose his gig? He can't be stupid. He knows what's going to happen if he begins to do this in the temple. There might be some consequences, but he can't help it. I've encountered the God of the universe. What else am I going to do? So how do we encounter the God of the universe? As I said, there was this chasm in between verses 13 and 14. You know, going before God or hearing that he needs to dip himself into the Jordan River seven times and then and being angry that that's what he has to do, and then verse 14 actually going and doing it. That there's this incredible, well, what happened? Well, at a certain point, Naaman had to come to a place and say, I've got nothing else. Everything else I have tried, everything else that I have done in order to better my situation, better my life, help me, save me, whatnot, has all failed. And I can't pay for it. I can't force it. I can't go through the ceremony. I just have to what? Receive it. I think one of the greatest stumbling blocks for most Christians is they get into that mindset of the default mode, which is I need to do things better before God blesses me, before God appears, before God is near to me. And it seems to me that every single person in the Bible who was blessed by the Lord, who had an encounter with God, whose life was transformed, didn't go through a process. They just received. And we put up so many blocks, we put up so many barricades in the way. We put our failures, we put our accomplishments, we put our position, we put our status, we put all of those things in the way and say, God, you're going to have to get over these things, or I'm going to have to get rid of these, or we make it so difficult, and God just says, no, just receive. Just receive what I have, and your life will become transformed. My question to us this morning is, have you encountered the Lord? And I know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to a room of church people. I'm one of you. Don't worry. I grew up in the church as well. And I know, because from my own life, I know how easy it can be to get into a mode of just going through the religious motion. And I don't think God sent his son Jesus Christ so that we can go through religious motions. That sounds boring to me. Religious motion does not sound like I came to give life and that more abundantly. I came so that they would receive joy. My dear brothers, I write these things to you so that you will receive, so that you will be joy. Rejoice, I say again, rejoice. I don't think that's what God's called us to. I don't think that's what he saved us for. And one of the things that I know I have to do in my own life is when I find myself in religious motion, when I find myself in kind of dead spirituality, I have to ask myself, okay, what am I? What am I holding up? What am I holding on to? What am I putting before? What motions am I trying to go through in order to receive from the Lord? And God says, just receive. Have you encountered the Lord? Are you encountering the Lord every single day? Because let me tell you something, I don't believe that God saved you so that you could be bored. I don't believe that God sent his son Jesus Christ to die on the cross so that you can be bored and languish and just blob your way into eternity. I think there's more than that. And Naaman gets out of the water and his life is completely turned around. He's encountered the God of the universe and he's never the same again. Ready? We're going to meet Naaman. Isn't that cool? We're going to meet Naaman. We're going to ask him about that encounter. That's a real person who lived a real life, and we get to ask him about that. I can't wait to ask him about his encounter with the Lord. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for this morning, and thank you for the blessing that it is to be your kids. Thank you, Lord, that we are not required to come to you and pay our way into your blessing, pay our way into your house, into your presence. Father, I thank you so much that just as Naaman was able to experience you and receive and his life was transformed, that's not an isolated story. That's just an example of what we can experience as well. Father, as we're here this morning, as we just can contemplate our own lives and our own walk with you, Father, would you speak to us? Would we just be honest with ourselves about whether or not we're really experiencing and encountering you day by day? I really believe, God, that's what you want for us. That in heavy times and in difficult times we don't mindlessly just put smiles on our face, but we know that we can lean into you, that we have a joy that cannot be robbed or taken away. Father, as we move into a time of communion, as we move into a time of remembering you, I pray that we're about to encounter you in a symbolic way to remember what you've done for us. So we ask your blessing on our morning and our time. Thank you for blessing us with your son, Jesus Christ. Pray this in his name.